Hi everyone, and welcome to the TA Discussion Hour. My name is Nathan Agin. I'm a teacher's assistant here with the Entheos Academy and a producer on some of the shows for entheosradio.com. So entheosacademy.com, entheosradio.com is where we're posting everything these days. And so today I wanted to go through a number of classes and a couple a few radio shows, and share some of my favorite big ideas over this last week. I've been really enjoying, going back and highlighting, because there's so much content, so many classes and shows that we're producing every week, that it's been fun to go back and sift through the material, just get a quick glimpse into what a lot of these teachers and writers and professors are talking about. And so some of the classes I'm going to highlight today, we have Love University with Mastin Kipp. Mastin runs a website called The Daily Love. We're in week two of that. The Feel Good Solution, End Overeating for Good with Isabel Tierney. We're in week four with that. Let's see here. Live Your Truth, Love Your Life with Ashley Turner and Terry Cole. We're in week five of that class, and I've talked about some of their items before. We're in week six of Strength for Life with Sean Phillips. And he talks about gratitude and support systems. We'll touch on that. And then we have Transform Your Life, Transform Our World with Alan Seal. Week five, Soul and Ego in Partnership. That's the theme for that week. Then we got another class called The Big Glow, Living an Inspired Life with Brian Piergrossi. We're in week three, talking about the inspired mind. And then from the radio side, we have Bringing Death and Dying to the Dinner Table with Laurel Lewis, and that's on Jessica Corbin's show, Vital Conversations. So Laurel is a hospice nurse, and she organizes these death and dying dinners. It's a very fascinating concept, and we'll talk about how do you die well. And then we have a conversation with Chip Conley on It's Just Good Business with Jeff Klein. And Chip, as some of you may know, was a professor with us. He helped kick off the academy. He was the first class we had. It was called Peak, How Great Businesses Get Their Mojo from Maslow. And Chip was a phenomenal teacher, a really fun class, like super practical information, and all about how a business can self-actualize, how a business can reach its potential in the marketplace and really transform lives. So Jeff had Chip on his show, and Chip was primarily talking about his new book, Emotional Equations, and we'll talk about one of the equations in the book, but just a great overall conversation. So those are all of the classes and shows we're going to highlight, we're going to talk about. You know, I'll maybe think of some other things as we go along, you know, pull in some other big ideas as we're talking, but that's the plan for today. So we'll go through this. We'll get through it as quickly as we can, and you know, just give you the practical wisdom, so you can see what's going on in one week, and let's have some fun. So let's go first to Love University with Mastin Kipp, and we're in week number two, and that is called Relationship Dynamics. So here's the big idea I wanted to pull out. Number two is called Addicted to Love. So what is a love addict? It is someone who is addicted to the approval or love of someone else. And from a spiritual perspective, is someone who makes someone else, the universe or higher power, as the source of their love. And this creates a tremendous amount of pain. So, you know, to break that down again, it's you're addicted, you're in need of that love from someone else. And instead of the universe, God, the higher power, whatever you call it, your source, instead of that being where you find your love, you know, for yourself in your life, you're putting that responsibility on another person or something else, you know. So you're shifting that perspective away from the universe and the higher power to mostly in your life, and that's you need that love. That's what he's talking about. It can be the greatest source of pleasure or pain, and it's an important lesson to learn that relationships are not there so that someone else can become God for you and fix you or make you better. Relationships are where you can come together and you work stuff out together. Relationships are not to be the sort of, but rather a reflection of Creator's love. And remember, when a friendship or a business relationship, no one is the source of your love. Take your power back. You are the source. Embody your love. So just some great ideas in there. And, you know, this is work that, you know, I'm definitely working on in terms of, you know, my relationships, improving them, not just romantic, but, you know, with family, with business, creative partners, and all that kind of stuff. You know, really figuring out, like, am I relying on them for some source of love, as opposed to understanding that it's completely, you know, within me already, and I can already draw on that. So just some great ideas from Masson's class, Love University, this week. And I love that line, relationships can be the greatest source of pleasure or pain. And I think, you know, we've all experienced relationships on both sides of that, when it is a great source of pleasure and when it's a great source of pain. So understanding that we have that ability to control, you know, whether we're going to experience pain from a relationship. And oftentimes it may be because we've placed too much responsibility or shifted that perspective to someone else. And to just shift it back to God, Creator, Source, Universe, Higher Power, that's where your true love is. And then to remember that relationships are not the source of your love, just a reflection of your love. That's really cool, and I think that's going to be a big shift for me, you know, as I continue to have relationships in my life, and certainly romantic ones, that the other person is not where I get my love. It's a reflection of our love. That's a really cool idea to me. Okay, so let's now move over to the feel-good solution to end overeating for good with Isabel Tierney, and we're in week number 4, which is called Learning to Love Emotions. So we got love resurfacing. And here's big idea number 2, hanging out with your emotions. If we want to heal and move our emotions through our body so that new emotions can come, we need to learn to spend time with them, no matter how unpleasant they are. So to do this, here are 4 steps. Number 1, feel the emotion in your body by identifying the sensations. You might experience a knot in your stomach, lightness, a tightness in the shoulders, tightness in the throat, etc. Actually, go ahead and name each sensation, focusing on the physical feeling itself. Number 2, tell yourself about the sensation. Now, let's say there is a tightness in your shoulders. What color is it? What is its shape? What about the texture? Is it sharp? Is it soft? Hear its sound. Taste its taste. Smell it. Feel its temperature and see if you have it associated with some words or memories or archetypal symbols like mythical beings or animals or images. Number 3, trust that the emotion knows what it's doing. If you give it enough space, patience, care, and friendliness, the emotion will flow through your body in a healthy way, and it'll make room for other emotions. And number 4, and personally I think this is one of the best things we can always do, breathe into your emotions. This creates a sense of spaciousness for the emotion to unfold and run its course. And that last line reminds me, that phrase, let's see, fear is excitement without the breath. That when I in my life am afraid of something or when I'm tense, I realize I'm not breathing. You know, I'm holding my breath, and it happens a lot. You know, if I'm watching a scary movie, which I don't particularly enjoy, you know, scary movies or frightening movies, but if I find myself in a situation where I'm watching one, I immediately have to remind myself to start breathing. Because if I'm breathing and I'm just letting the breath flow, then if something happens on the screen, I'm not going to be as startled by it because I'm allowing that breath to go. So fear is excitement without the breath. So excitement with the, you know, when you add breath, then you can get excited about something, and you can also just allow things to flow and have their course. So I thought this was a great idea. I know, you know, Isabel's work obviously is essentially around overeating and dealing with those kinds of issues, but I think for any of us, you know, being able to really identify what's going on in our body, how does it feel, what does it sound like, the color, because also once you name it, once you go, wow, I'm really tight in my shoulder, that sensation will start to travel because you've now named it, you've now identified it, and you're starting to bring some awareness to that spot in your body. So that once you can start doing that and get more awareness of what's going on, I think it's whether you're dealing with overeating issues or not, I think that's just a great practice. And, you know, talking about trusting that the emotion knows what it's doing and breathing into it, those are just great, great points to remember. Let's move to Live Your Truth, Love Your Life with Ashley Turner and Terry Cole. We're in week number 5. Downloaded Blueprints is the title of this week. And big idea number 2 is your new and improved money blueprint. Now, this really intrigued me because I'm someone that, you know, I did not grow up with, rich. And, you know, certainly I'm not rich or overly wealthy these days. And at the same time, I would like to improve my relationship with money. I think money is a very complicated issue for so many of us. We have so many things tied into it. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family, single parent, and, you know, we had enough, and we had a good, I had a great childhood, and I feel very lucky, but it was not extravagant. You know, we didn't have tons of money just laying around. And, you know, I would like to see, you know, how can I improve my, you know, my patterns and my behaviors and my hang-ups around money. So I was really intrigued by what they were talking about this week. So your new and improved money blueprint. So here are 5 steps. Number 1, be here now. By creating the ability to be present in your life, you create the opening to catch the fearful thought before it gets filed in the reality bin. So by creating the ability to be present in your life, you create the opening to catch the fearful thought before it gets filed in the reality bin. Fearful thought, you know, I'm going to run out of money, I'm not going to have money. So just being present in your life. When you can catch those thoughts, you know what, I'm throwing that in the trash. Number 2, words have wings. Be aware of the way you talk about money and change all of the language that is not in line with your goals. You know, if you constantly talk about how poor you are, or you know, you don't have any money, or like, oh geez, that's way too expensive, or whatever. You know, it reminds me of this group I belong to where, you know, we'll discuss what we've done for our career, you know, over the last 30 days. And one of the kind of tenets of the group is really being clear, really being aware of how you're talking about yourself, because, you know, why would we go with anything else? Why would we trust? Why would we assume the opposite is true? Like if you're up in front of a group and you're saying, yeah, you know, I haven't really gotten anything done this month, and you know, I'm not really not really being productive, and just kind of lounging around a lot and feeling, you know, kind of mopey. We're going to take you at your word. We're going to assume like that's exactly what you're going through and dealing with, and we're going to trust that. But if you get up there and be like, you know, here's everything I did, and I'm really excited and fired up, and here's what I'm going for, and all this kind of stuff, that's what we're going to take away. So, you know, just to always be clear on your language and make sure it aligns with, you know, who you want to be in your life and who you know you are. And money is the same way. And so this is something definitely I can pay attention to, you know, because I think oftentimes I'm very intimidated by people who have money. And, you know, there is that kind of a dynamic that be set up, you know, someone's on a pedestal. So remember, words have wings. What you say is going to take you where you're going. So just be aware of how you talk about money and start to remove the language that doesn't serve you. Number 3, manifesting nightly ritual. As the last thing you do before you fall asleep, take time to think about what you want to create in your financial life and conjure the feelings of having it, and then release it. So as you're lying in bed, you're kind of drifting off, really, you know, think about what you want to create in your financial life. What goals do you want to have? You know, what kind of money would you like to earn? What would you like to be doing with your money? And then what is the actual experience of having that? You know, the feelings of abundance and, or generosity or playfulness, you know, what would it feel like? Because, you know, for any of us, if we had tens of thousands of dollars, you know, just sitting in the bank, you know, that's not going to create happiness. I think we all know that. So what's going to be the experience of having those kinds of resources? And that's something else fun is just remembering that money is just another resource, and it's another form of energy. It's a financial form of energy. And, you know, I really believe as I, you know, put more out into the world, and it may be through, you know, creative energy, you know, I might get that back in terms of financial energy. Or sometimes I'll put out financial energy and get that back in terms of another kind of energy. So it really can be, you know, very circular, and it's not always, you know, quid pro quo, but just remembering, you know, what you put out, you will get back. It may not always look like what you want, but it will be what you need. And so as you're thinking about this and kind of plotting this out in your head, then remember to just release it. You know, there's no sense in setting yourself up for an expectation or something specific that you then need to commit to. Okay, number four, seeing is believing. Create a vision and feeling board of what you want in your life. Look at the board a few times a day and engage all of your senses to create the full experience of actually having what is on the board. So after you've been manifesting, you know, this nightly ritual of what you want in your financial life, actually go ahead and create a vision and feeling board of what you want in your life. And look at the board a few times a day. Make sure it's, you know, over your desk or somewhere you always go. And engage all of your senses. You know, so taste, touch, smell, feel, hearing, whatever you can incorporate into that to create the full experience of actually having what is on that board. I'm sure you can get really creative with all the, you know, pictures or images or sounds or tastes or smells. You know, really create what it is. And as you continue to look at that, you know, your subconscious is going to work on it. Number five. Changing your mind about anything is work. So the realization that you can change your mind and your physical lot in life is the start. Because a lot of people, they just think that, you know, they can't do it, or they don't have the ability to do it, or the willpower, or whatever it is. And it's just understanding that we have the ability that we can do it. And it's not to say that it will be entirely easy. It will require work. It just doesn't mean it'll necessarily be difficult, but it will be work. And if you're committed to that, if you're committed to the work and you know, making it happen and getting it done, you can accomplish anything. So let's move over to Strength for Life with Sean Phillips, and we're in week six, living a full strength life. Big idea number one is the gratitude practice. And you know, I'm really big on gratitude. I make it part of my daily journaling. So Sean is talking about the same stuff. You know, post-transformation, take some time to sit down, get a piece of paper and pen, and begin writing all the successes you've experienced over the last few weeks. And this actually reminds me, last week we talked about Dr. Heidi Grant Halverson, very similar experience. You know, if you need a boost of confidence, to write down your past successes, and it's going to remind you of, like, wow, look at everything I've accomplished. So same thing with Sean. Write down your successes and all and everything you've experienced over the last few weeks. You know, spend 5 minutes writing this stuff down. Then step back for a few minutes and say out loud the list you made. See, because it's so ingrained that, you know, we get through, you know, an entire program or whatever we're doing, we just kind of ignore the things we did positively. We tend to focus on, you know, what we didn't do well or the negatives and all that kind of stuff. The positives, that's where we build true strength and stamina. So the better we review our results, the better our results become. Let me repeat that. The better we review our results, the better our results become. So start to affirm the positive more and build more. Evaluate the entire 12-week program that Sean and his students did from a place of positivity as you move forward, and adjust to have an even more successful 12 weeks next time. So live inside. Strength for Life practice isn't just about your body. It's about your life. So, you know, having strength inside is going to manifest that strength outside. And, you know, final thought from Sean on this, practice gratitude like your life depends on it, because it does. Great idea. And another idea from Sean, big idea number three, support systems. So for sticking to things, there is such powerful glue in social systems. Now, you know, I'm sure we all know it's great to be accountable, and if you can be publicly accountable to a goal you have, that's even better. But here are some other ideas. Pay it forward. Share your strength and the power of giving back. Number two, reveal the things that you already have. So it's not about getting, it's not about gaining, it's about giving what you already have and understanding your capacity and energy you now have. So reveal the things that you already have. It's not about gaining, it's about giving. And just understanding your capacity, the energy you now have, that can be great. And so now that you've embodied the practice, share it with people who are open to it. Again, pay it forward. It's not going to only help you embody the work, but it'll lift your world. You'll become a beacon of strength for others through stepping into your own strength and how you live into your full potential. Those who have transformed their lives, you know, a lot of them have figured out how to teach it. So if you want to live this, give it away. It's that great quote, you know, be the change you want to see. Be the change you wish to see in the world. So share with people who are open to it. Be a mentor. Be a support. Teach others how to eat and be fit or whatever you're doing, you know, because that's what you're doing in your life. Be involved in paying it forward. And that's, you know, part of why, you know, I've been doing these shows, is because this is an opportunity not only for me to, you know, embody more of this wisdom and understand it, but then to share it, to spread it with people. Because I get it. There's a lot we're all plugged into, and there's a lot we're doing. So this is a way for me to, you know, learn some of these ideas and share them at the same time. So let's see here. Let's go to Transform Your Life, Transform Our World with Alan Seal, week number 5, The Soul and Ego in Partnership. So big idea number 1, soul and ego. We've all heard of the soul and the ego, but do we really know what they are? The soul lives in the body and in consciousness. It understands the big picture, the vision, and the dream. It loves creation and evolution. These are the oceans it happily swims in. It thrives on adventure, learning, discovery, and growth. This is all the soul now. The soul knows nothing about the rules and structures of daily life. It has no arms or legs. It has no clue about how the world works, but it's incredibly comfortable exploring the unknown. Now, the ego is rooted in the physical world. It is the part that thinks. It's the intellect. It's the part that distinguishes itself from others. It organizes, it makes plans, it gets things done, it functions in the horizontal, it ensures your survival, and makes sure that nothing threatens your well-being. We need the ego. So the ego is not interested in risk. It's trying to ensure your survival. So this is just a kind of a context to understand that there's a soul and an ego inside all of us. The soul is the much more kind of malleable, flexible, big ideas kind of section of us, and the ego is that more masculine energy of creating, you know, actually doing and executing, and the soul is the more feminine, creating big idea brainstorming. So we have both of those ideas. We have both those parts to us. So which moves us into big idea number 2, that the ego and soul aren't enemies. And I love how Alan starts this off. He says, we spend a lot of time hating on the ego. Our religions and philosophies tell us that the ego is the enemy and must be annihilated. But how could the ego be our enemy? We wouldn't survive a day without it. When the ego is putting up resistance to taking a risk or following a dream, what if you pause and pull back instead of criticizing it. Ask, what if the ego is doing whatever it can from its limited perspective? What if it's just trying to do its job the only way it knows how? And remember, the ego feels comfortable in the physical world, but knows nothing about the unseen realms of the soul, the realms of vision and possibility. The ego is scared, and the soul must partner with it and take care of it. So what a beautiful comparison. I think a lot of times I'll come into contact with people or interact with people, and you know, you just have to realize and take a step back, you know, they're doing the best they can. This is with the best information they have, they're doing it. Is it the way I do it? No, but that's okay. They're doing the best they can. I'm doing the best I can. So while we have that realization with other people in our life, what if we started to have that with people in our own life? And, you know, really become compassionate for our ego. That, you know, ego is just trying to protect us and make us safe and you know, make sure that we survive. And so we just have to step back and go, right, the ego doesn't know about this unknown, you know, dream world where things are unsafe or there is a risk. And that's okay. The soul's going to partner. We're going to partner up. We're going to form a strong alliance, and we're going to move forward. So the other part that Alan talks about, he says, when religions and philosophies talk about the dangers of pride and craving and wanting everything for yourself, they're talking about the immature ego. But this immature ego should not be attacked. It is a child, and our job is to raise it. Really cool, powerful idea. So the bad, quote-unquote bad ego we hear about a lot, that's the immature ego. And it's not something to be beaten up and tossed into a corner. It's a child. It's a young form. And our job is to raise it, is to help it along so that it becomes more mature and, you know, isn't looking for pride and craving for everything and, you know, for themselves. So the ego works really hard to accomplish something. And then we knock it when it feels proud of what it's done. You know, would we treat our child that way? If our child came to us with a drawing they worked hard on, wouldn't we be happy that they're proud of themselves? So again, you know, there's nothing wrong with pride. It's a great feeling. And, you know, when you've accomplished something that you're happy about, you know, have some pride. And there's no reason to, you know, try to eliminate that feeling. That, oh, no, I can't be proud of anything I've done. Absolutely not. You can absolutely be proud and confident and happy with what you've done. It's just understanding, you know, is it the immature ego that's now craving the attention? And it's just, you know, just coming from a place of awareness of, am I doing this because I really love this work and I need to do it, or because I want to be recognized for doing this work? So just something to think about. All right, we got just a few more big ideas to cover. Let's go into The Big Glow, Living an Inspired Life with Brian Pierre Grossi, week number 3. We're talking about the inspired mind. So big idea number 3 from Brian is a great athlete. So imagine you're a world-class athlete. Here are some questions to think about. What do you talk about? You know, with your friends, what do you discuss with your family? What do you talk about? Where is your attention in your life? How do you spend your day? What do you think about? What books do you read? Who do you hang out with? What do you watch on YouTube? All these questions, you know, if you're a world-class athlete, if you want to be in great physical shape and you think about everything you're doing, and if you're doing all of that stuff now, you will get into shape. So if you're really paying attention to what you talk about and where your attention is and how you spend your day and what you think about and what books you read and who you hang out with and what you watch on YouTube, if you're really paying attention to that and all those things are aligned with your goals and what you are looking to accomplish, and you're doing that now, then you will be that ideal. You're looking, you know, you will be on the road to that path of success, of being a great athlete or whatever it is, a great parent, a, you know, creative force, whatever. But if all those things are in alignment with your goals, you can't lose. So whatever you want to be in that space now. Because when you say, you know, oh, well, you know, starting January 1st, I'm going to, you know, do this, or you know, beginning of the year, or next month, or next year, there's a struggle, and there's resistance. So for a great athlete, working out and eating right is what they want to do. It's not a struggle. You know, if you're super fired up about your goals, then, you know, what you read and what you watch online and what you talk about isn't going to be a chore. It's going to be fun for you. You're going to be excited to do it. And so it's just connecting with what are your goals? What is, you know, where is your heart in terms of what you want in your life? And if you find something that your heart is truly in, you can't be stopped. And you're going to really love it. So what do you want to be? And once you figure that out, then put all your attention and your focus and your goals toward it, and you can't lose. Let's move on to bringing death and dying to the dinner table with Laurel Lewis, who is a registered nurse in Southern California. And Laurel had a great conversation with Jessica on Vital Conversations. And this is actually a topic that I kind of more recently had experience with. So Laurel, again, is a hospice nurse and, you know, just helps people at the end of their lives. And it's something we all will experience. And so I think, you know, one of the things Laurel was talking about is that we need this conversation. You know, and that's why she, you know, brings death and dying to the dinner table. She literally has these parties where people can discuss this. You know, what happens at the end of life? And you know, it's going to be, you know, different things for different people, but just understanding, you know, what the process is, what people are going through, just illuminating that conversation so that there's less fear or stress or anxiety, not only on the part of the person who's, you know, dying, but then everybody around them so that everybody can, you know, kind of act accordingly. So it was a great conversation, very illuminating. Like I said, you know, I recently experienced, you know, a loss in my life and was very much there at the end. And it was very helpful to have somebody, a hospice nurse, you know, who could provide a little bit more context and information. And so, yeah, it was a great conversation. But I wanted to highlight big idea number two: how do you die well? Because I think it's, it was just a great question. How do you die well? And Laurel put it like this: your deathbed experience is a reflection of your life experience. So if you've lived with anxiety, fear, or negativity, that's often what will appear at the end of your life cycle. So if you've been stressed out and negative and have pushed people away, that's often what it's going to look like as you're dying. You know, things do not suddenly turn around. We all know that. No matter what we're looking for in our life, it doesn't happen overnight. So if you want to have beautiful, loving people at your bedside, develop and invest in those relationships now. Good relationships take time, energy, transparency, understanding, devotion, and communication. Laurel has also seen that many people who experience a peaceful crossing over have found some kind of purpose and meaning in their life. These individuals have had a much more compassionate experience in their own life. So again, if you can find some kind of purpose and meaning in your life, and it doesn't have to be on a grand scale, but just something satisfying and fulfilling for you, and those individuals that Laurel has seen who have found that had a much more compassionate experience in their own life and at the end of their life. So that was a great conversation to listen to. I highly encourage you checking out the entire thing. Let's move into our final big idea with the conversation with Chip Conley. So I mentioned a little bit about Chip at the top of the show. Let's just dive right in. So the book is Emotional Equations, and this book came out of Chip's own experience of feeling like a prisoner in his life. And he turned the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And it's an extremely powerful book, not only Frankl's experiences in the Holocaust, but then also his development of this new psychology called logotherapy, you know, the finding meaning in our life. So Chip read this book, was really, you know, profoundly impacted by it, and he wanted to distill the information into a simple math equation so that he could remember on a daily basis what was important from Frankl's writings. And here's the equation: despair equals suffering minus meaning. Despair equals suffering minus meaning. Now, let me break down the terms in here, because the constant in this equation is suffering. Suffering is always around. It's always present. It's just how prevalent and persistent it is in your life. So there's always going to be suffering out there. Now, meaning is the variable. You know, remind yourself, in every situation, there are lessons to be learned right now. And as meaning goes up, despair goes down. So let me, you know, put some examples to this. If suffering is a 10 and meaning is a 7, then despair is 2, level of 2. And if you raise the meaning to 8, so now we have suffering 10 minus 8, meaning, equals despair 2. So as you raise the meaning, the despair decreases. So as, you know, as something happens in your life and you can assign more value, more meaning to it, you're going to despair less. You'll be able to see the meaning and why a certain thing needed to happen, why something needed to unfold for you. And as you're assigning that meaning, you will despair less. So it's a very simple equation. Despair equals suffering minus meaning. Or another way to say it, suffering minus meaning equals despair. So that, you know, that's it. It's just the more value and meaning you can assign something in your life when it doesn't seem to go your way, the less you will despair. You know, I just remember this great quote that what we see as disappointment is just the universe biding its time. So again, if you can assign that meaning to events in your life, I think you're going to have a much more powerful and positive experience. So that wraps up all of the big ideas and notes I wanted to highlight from this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. Again, you can go to entheosacademy.com for all the classes and entheosradio.com for all of the radio stuff. And we're moving everything over to entheos.com. And so entheos.com/blog is where you'll find all these blog posts, all the big ideas. You can dive in, find out more, check out the classes, check out the radio shows. And if you have any questions or comments or there's something you'd like to discuss, let me know. You can send me an email at nathan@entheos.com, E-N-T-H-E-O-S.com, nathan@entheos.com. Happy to interact and answer any questions that you have. Hope you're doing well. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time in the discussion hour. All right, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.